In 1983, I was 50 years old, and my dear firstborn, Ron Jr., was turning 21, and he was about ready to go through the passage into responsible manhood. He was unmarried at the time and still living at home and going to school. And I thought, you know, this is a great opportunity. Having not had a father do this to me, I'd read a lot of material, and I thought, this would be a time, I think, where you take your son on a special dinner, and everything you forgot to tell him about what it means to be a man, this is the shot you take. Don't lose it. So I invited him to dinner at a very nice restaurant, and I wanted to talk to him about women, I wanted to talk to him about money, I wanted to talk to him about career, I wanted to talk to him about marriage, about children, and so I was really geared up to do this, and we had this wonderful dinner at Burrell's up in San Mateo, and then it came time for dessert, and it was at that time I thought, this is the moment. And so I said, son, could I just share with you for a little bit just some things I've learned through life, some of my mistakes and some of the things that the Lord has taught me and some of the blessings that have come through obedience to him. And I'd just like to share that with you. And my dear son said, sure, Dad, sure. I mean, why not? And I began for about an hour this very important lecture, kind of just a catch-up of everything I probably forgot to tell him somewhere along the line. It was obviously it was going to be too late anyway, but I thought I'd give it a shot. And so he just sat there and ate his dessert and drank a cup of coffee, then another cup of coffee, and his father droned on. And then I was finished. This great moment was over. And I said to him, are there any questions? Is there any comments you want to make? And I tell you, as long as I live, I will never forget from the lips of my beloved firstborn his words, great words of maturity. He said, Dad, I heard everything you said. I'm just going to ask you one question. I said, what's that? He said, Dad, do I have to be 50 at 21? And I said, no, just as long as you heard a 50-year-old at 21. I understand maturity takes a lifetime. And I have heard that phrase in my heart over and over again. Do I have to be 50 at 21? And from the Father in heaven who wants to bring us into spiritual maturity, he doesn't expect us all to be grown up in every area of our life all at once. He just wants us in the process. Are we willing to enter the process with him as he brings us into spiritual maturity? That's why I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 40 and 41. What I'd like to do is give you just a moment of context, then I'm just going to briefly summarize chapter 40 for you and then get into 41. The context of Genesis 37 through 39, as you recall, is this young boy, Joseph, at 17, the 11th son of the patriarch Jacob, is in a position where he is greatly beloved by his father Jacob because he was born in his during Jacob's old age. Jacob expressed that love to him by giving him a coat of many colors. Joseph then, for some reason, saw his other brothers doing something that violated the family rules and turned his brother in, ratted on his brother to his father. That started to build some hatred in the hearts of the brothers who weren't as loved as much, felt that absence of love from their father. And then just kind of to nail it down so that hatred and jealousy would develop into a murderous attitude, Joseph comes to the brothers one day and says, I just had two dreams. bring Dad in, and they all sat around. Two dreams were all of you are going to bow down one day to me. That was a bit much. The brothers started the plan of how to murder their brother, Joseph. The opportunity came up in the north of Israel. And as it came, there was an argument whether we should actually murder him or what else can we do. And the Ishmaelites just happened to be coming by. Some traders from Syria, and they were going south to Egypt on King's Highway. And as they came by, a great idea came to Judah. And Judah said, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. That way there's no blood on our hands. After all, he is our brother. And so they sell this young man of 17 for 20 shekels of silver. And he's taken to Egypt. He arrives in Cairo, and he's sold again to Potiphar, the captain of the guard of the Pharaoh. And he starts as a slave in that house. And the next thing you know, he becomes an attendant over many things. And then as the captain of the guard looks at Joseph, he is different than any slave he's ever had, and in time he promotes him to steward over all of his household and all of his fields. And the scriptures tell us, and the Lord was with him at 17. The Lord was with him, Emmanuel. And then Potiphar's wife accuses this young man of rape. He ends up in prison. The warden looks at him, says, this is the most unusual prisoner, puts him in charge of everything in the prison, and the Lord was with him. And then we come to chapter 40. We don't know how many years exactly we're going to see, though it's going to be a 13-year imprisonment in one way or another, either as a slave or a prisoner. But sometime while he's in prison, before he's about the year, he may be about 28 years old now, as we'll see in this text. While he's in prison, the Pharaoh's cupbearer and the baker end up there, and the warden says, Joseph, you're in charge of them. And one day, Joseph walks into the cell and he sees them, and they're both very depressed. And he says to them, what's going on here? And he says, they say to him, well, listen, we had a dream. He had a dream, I had a dream. But they're different dreams, but we're very, very depressed. Because there is no one who can interpret the dreams for us. And Joseph says, according to verse 8 of chapter 40, Joseph says to them, I want you to know something. Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. Well, you see, the Egyptians used to think that if you had a dream, they came from the other world, that dark world. They came from the place of the dead and the place of the gods. And so they were very, very important, and they wanted a correct interpretation of all these dreams. Now, dreams are a sequence of sensations, images, thoughts passing through a sleeping person's mind. Some dreams are the roots because of their clarity for poetic and musical invention, as well as a scientific solution and spiritual precept. How many times have you been awakened and in the night over a dream and gotten some incredible spiritual insight, and then just kicked yourself in the morning that you didn't write it down because you forgot it? You knew you had the experience, but you forgot it. I've learned to just keep a tablet and a pencil right by my nightstand. I can write in the dark now. Boy, the Lord wants to talk to me. The tablet's big enough to write in the dark. I'll figure it out in the morning, but at least I'll remember it. So dreams are really important. So some dreams are like that. Other dreams are but a revelation of our true nature because of the lack of moral or ethical restriction. And the images are filled with sinful actions and selfish hopes and goals. And according to Leviticus 15:1 and Deuteronomy 23:10, the Lord holds a person responsible for certain sinful dreams. Isn't that interesting? It's kind of like a computer, garbage in, garbage out. If you're going to pour your junk into your life during the day and then you have a dream at night about that junk, what did you expect but junk? You should have gotten junk because that's all you put into your heart that day. Some dreams are spiritual in content, which God uses to speak to the godly, like Abraham, Jacob, and Joseph, as well as the ungodly King Abimelech. And in this story, God wants to use Joseph to be his instrument to interpret the dreams of others. At this time, Joseph did not know that his spiritual ability to interpret these dreams would eventually be used of God to bring him into the presence of Pharaoh, who in turn would be the instrument of God to fulfill the dreams he gave to Joseph at 17 years of age in Hebron, Israel. So Joseph says in verse 8, don't you understand that interpretations belong to God, not to mankind? So tell me your dreams. So the men have confidence in this young man, Joseph, who's now about 28. And the cupbearer, who was a political advisor to Pharaoh, and also one who tastes his wine, so that there would be no poison. He tells him his dreams. He said, I had this dream where a vine came up, three branches came out, it budded, it blossomed, grapes came on it, I had the cup of Pharaoh, I took the grapes, I squeezed them, it fell into the cup, I handed the cup to Pharaoh, and he accepted it. The baker said, I had a dream where there were three wicker baskets on my head full of all kinds of material that I had baked, and on the top basket was all the material, all the bread for the Pharaoh, but instead of the Pharaoh getting it, some bird came in and ate the top basket. Cupbearer and the baker didn't know what to make of it. Joseph immediately, by the power of God, said to them, to the cupbearer, he said, the three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, you'll be placed back into your position as an honored cupbearer and legal advisor, political advisor. To you, baker, your story, your dream, is one in which in 3 days your head will be taken off, your body will be hung on a tree, and the birds will eat it. 3 days went by, and the Pharaoh threw a party, and he brought forth out of prison the baker and the cupbearer. He honored the cupbearer, and he had the baker's head taken off. It's very interesting that Joseph said to the cupbearer after he interpreted the dream, by the way, when you are restored, would you remember me? I should have never been in Egypt. I should have never been in this dungeon. And just when you come into your position, would you just kind of remember me? And the scriptures say very clearly, very, very clearly, in 23 of chapter 4, the chief cupbearer, however, did not what? Remember Joseph. In fact, he forgot him. I've been trying to demonstrate through this wonderful story of Joseph, not only a man who lives by faith in Yahweh, but he is becoming an image of Christ, one who will follow, one who will come and redeem all of humanity. And over again, you see Christ demonstrated through Joseph in his life and his suffering and his glory. As Joseph suffered unjustly in prison before he was released and placed on the throne, so Christ came to earth to suffer unjustly on our behalf. As the writer to the Hebrews would state to all of us, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. spiritual maturity then, according to chapter 40, begins when you trust God regardless of the circumstances. It's putting your faith in the living God who is present and not letting the immediate physical and emotional circumstances take rule over your heart and your mind. That you're a follower of Jesus Christ, that you love Him, that He loves you, and that all of these circumstances, whether they be good or bad, when they come into your life, they're designed by God to draw you closer to Him and put your faith in Him so you can keep going to honor Him the rest of your life. Every once in a while, I get just a streak of fear. I don't know where it comes from. Just fear grabs my heart. And I always have to stop and say, now, where did that come from? That's not God. God doesn't give you a heart of fear. Where did that come from? And I find myself really frightened. And then I start reviewing where it's coming from. And I'm able to do that sometimes. And then I go back to God and I say to Him, you're here, right? You're really here, aren't you? And you're in my heart, aren't you? And this is from somewhere else beside you, isn't it? And I can trust you, right? And you're going to be here, right? We just have this little dialogue. It's kind of reassurance. And then I'm calm. I don't think I'm the only one who goes through that. I think everyone in this room has those kind of experiences. You suddenly get a notice in the mail. Your job's over. Everything in your heart goes down. But. Lord says, yeah, what? yeah, but what? They say, I'm sorry, Lord, I'm sorry. I just got frightened for a minute. Is this one of those trips to Egypt? Is this one of these dungeon times? Is this one of these 13-year situations where I have to grow again? Our life is no longer our own and it's bought with a price. It could be. Or maybe it's only a couple weeks, or only a couple months, or only a couple years, but it's always God with us, in us, guarding us, protecting us, guiding us, comforting us in the midst of all the circumstances. So, chapter 40, we understand that God is with us regardless of the circumstances, and that we are no longer to trust in ourselves. Now turn to Genesis 41, the second step in our process of becoming spiritually mature. 31:1-16. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile. When out of the river, they came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and thin and bony, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the river bank. And the cows that were ugly and thin and bony ate up the 7 slick, fat cows, but it didn't affect their physical health. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. In the morning, his mind was troubled. So he sent for all the magicians, wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dream, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer said to the Pharaoh, "Today I'm reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and guess what? He interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream, and things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was, you know, restored to my position. The baker, he was hung. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought to him from the dungeon, where he had shaven, changed his clothes. He came when he had shaven and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." And Joseph said, "I cannot do it." Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "But God will give Pharaoh the answer he deserves." The first step in our spiritual maturity is to place our faith in God regardless of the circumstances. And the second one is to no longer trust in ourselves. Joseph said, "I can't do it." But God can, through me. That's the difference. So Pharaoh has these two dreams, which were self-explanatory, as we heard. But he had trouble interpreting them. So he surrounds himself with all these wise men. He surrounds himself with the magicians. Now they have some hints. They know about the reeds. They know that that's where they all along the bank of the Nile. And the Nile was always a symbol of the vegetation. And it had a lot to do with a symbol of power and wealth. For as it overflows, it became the source of the fertility of the land. The cows were the symbol of Egypt, as well as many of the gods. I just got this. I didn't open it, and I opened it yesterday. Here is Egypt's Nile Valley, you know. Here is the whole deal. You can get this in National Geographic. I'm not selling these on the side to get through college. I'm just telling you, here is a wonderful thing. This is the Old Kingdom. This is before Joseph's time, but it shows all of the pyramids and all of the how fertile the valley was and how important it was to the whole deal. And then I didn't plan on this, but Dr. Campbell here, his mother and father are from Egypt, and I'm going to loan this to you. You're going to give that back to me, see where you're from, okay? And if you'd have stayed there, you'd have been much richer than working over here at Stanford, I'm sure. But anyway, so they had the clues. These wise men had the clues of the reeds and the Nile and the cows, and but there was no insight. They didn't gain any insight. It's interesting that Job would write later in his suffering. He said, "To God belongs wisdom and power, counsel and understanding. He leads counselors away, strips and makes fools of judges. He silenced the lips of trusted advisors and takes away the discernment of elders. He reveals the deep things of darkness and brings deep shadows into night." Only God can deal with dreams correctly. Only God knows our hearts and what he's doing and what we're doing and how to relate to all that. So the Pharaoh is reminded by the cupbearer 2 years later. "Oh, Pharaoh, oh, Pharaoh." Is there some musical about like, "Oh, Pharaoh, oh, Pharaoh"? Is there? Gary, you know that? Kind of, you're the mission deacon. Don't you know stuff like that? Oh, what are we going to do? Okay. Pharaoh, Pharaoh. Isn't it? Come on. Some high school song? I'll ask Carolyn. Carolyn, is there a Pharaoh, Pharaoh? Okay. Do you want to sing it? Okay. Just check it. But anyway, the cupbearer says, "Oh, Pharaoh, Pharaoh. I can't believe I forgot this. There was this kid in prison when I was there, as you recall, and we had this dream. And you know what? The baker and I had this dream, and he interpreted that thing exactly. And as you've noticed, we have a new baker." And then, c'est moi, it's just me, but I remember he interpreted dreams exactly. We ought to get him up here. Let's get him out of the dungeon. So what they did was they shaved him right away. If you do any study in Egyptian history, you discover that the Egyptians of this season, about 1900 B.C., the Egyptians couldn't stand hair, so they just shaved all their hair off their body, off their heads. So here comes Joseph, who's been in all this prison for years, you know, why shave? They shave everything off, put on a new flock, and he's brought up before the Pharaoh. She said, listen, I heard you're really good, kid, about interpreting dreams. I had two. I really need to have your insight. And right away, Joseph gives a witness for the Lord. I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answers he deserves. You know, when you hear those phrases, I cannot do it, you get this wonderful image of the words of Christ to his disciples when he says in John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. From apart from me, you can do nothing. Just as the Father has loved me, I also love you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Spiritual maturity takes many steps as we grow. The first one is that we're to live by faith in God, regardless of the circumstances. Then the next step is to no longer trust in ourselves. And all this is possible when we are filled with the Spirit of God. Look at verse 17. He tells him his dreams again, and then down at 28. It is just as I said to the Pharaoh, says Joseph. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. 7 years of great abundance are coming throughout the land of Egypt. But 7 years of famine will follow them, and all the abundance in Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will raise the land. The abundance in the land will not be remembered because of the famine that followed it will be so severe. Look at verse 32. The reason the dream was given to Pharaoh in two forms is that the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it. Yahweh, my God, will do it. And now, let the Pharaoh look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest of Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. They should collect all the food of those good years that are coming up and store up the grain under the authority of Pharaoh to be kept in the cities for food. This food shall be held in reserve for the country to be used during the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt, so that the country may not be ruined by famine. And here is this young 28-year-old. He's just got all cleaned up for the first time in years. He's standing in front of the most powerful man in the country, the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he's telling him not only his dream, but what the Pharaoh ought to do in light of that interpretation. And the Pharaoh listens, and he has in his mind all his wise men and all his magicians, and he's saying, boy, this is different. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. Sure. Kind of bandwagon effect. I mean, what was the second choice? So Pharaoh asked them, and here is the key, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Joseph, this wonderful man under very trying circumstances, all of them basically unjustified, sold into slavery by his brothers, sold into slavery at the slave market, put into prison unjustly. And the Pharaoh listens and says, I got it. It sounds true. It sounds real. It sounds like God, your God, has spoken through you. Where can we find a man among us, like you recommended, who's filled with the Spirit of your God? What a moment. At no time did Joseph say, excuse me, I'm right here. He never did it. He was simply looking out. He was being a servant of the living God. He was simply doing what he was told. He was a vessel in which the living God should speak through. He was looking out for the welfare of the whole nation. And the Pharaoh asked him. He gave him advice. And then he just stepped back. And the Pharaoh liked what he heard, but said, it'll never occur unless we get a man exactly like you. Where can we get one filled with the Spirit of God? Moses would later say, 500 years later, The Lord God shall raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers. To him you shall give heed in everything he says to you, and it shall be that every soul that does not heed the prophet shall be utterly destroyed from among the people. Not only was Joseph able to interpret the dreams, but he became a prophet at that moment. Like his great-grandfather Abraham, like Isaac, and like Jacob, he became a prophet in which he not only lived in the present, but he was able to see into the future by the Spirit of God. And everyone who heeded that information will be blessed, and everyone who did not heed that information will be destroyed. In the immediate context, it's not spiritual destruction as much as physical, because if they don't heed to the fact that this incredible famine is coming, they will all die of starvation. And we're certainly aware of what that's like across this world as we watch our newscasts. Spiritual maturity begins with learning to live by faith in God, regardless of the immediate circumstances. And then the next step is to no longer trust in ourselves. And all this is possible when we're filled with the Spirit of God. And then we are to allow the Lord to raise us up. Because part of being spiritually mature, the hope is, as you go through a maturing process, like my son, like my grandson as they're growing, is that somewhere you'll get into a position where you can bless many. That's what the goal of spiritual maturity is all about, that you might bless God and bless many, that he may live through you. That's the whole idea of growing up. Renee says to me, calls me up last week, "Papa, yes, listen." I listen. I don't hear nothing. "Did you hear it?" "No, try it again." "What is it?" "Papa, listen." I whistled. That's important in our maturing process. We're all going to end up at a 49er game, you know. You got to learn to whistle. Part of life. But in the spiritual maturity, sometimes we want to get in a position to lead before our time, and you could hurt many people doing that. We're in a hurry to be leaders. That's why the scriptures are so clear. Don't lay hands quickly on a novice. What's that mean? Well, don't give a man before his time too much responsibility. It could hurt a lot of people. Doesn't mean you won't do it someday, but just don't lay hands too quickly. Understand where he is, what he's about, what he's learning. Let him be a disciple for a season. Come after me, and I will make you become what? Disciples of men. How long does that take? As long as I think it takes. Later they would find out it's 3 years and then a lifetime. And keep in mind that spiritual maturity is chronological, but it's also immediately. It goes on all the time. It's current all the time. It's present tense all the time. Because you have all kinds of new experiences that you get into, and so there's this maturing process that's going all the time. Here's a new situation, Ron Ritchie. What do you do? Well, the first thing, it looks horrible, so don't trust in the circumstances, trust in God. What's the next thing? Don't trust in yourself. Oh, okay. The third thing is what? Let the Spirit of God rule. Okay, then what? Then maybe God will use that to give you an ability to help many through it, or with it, or because of it. But we all are in this wonderful maturing process that Paul tells us about, which is that we are all to grow up in Christ Jesus. Ephesians chapter 4. We're in the process of becoming more and more like Jesus. That's what's going on. Then the last paragraph. Not only be filled with the Spirit of God, but allow the Lord to raise you up at the proper time. In 41, 39, we see this, that Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning as wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." Do you ever get the sense in these passages that the Egyptians don't like to work? Do you remember Potiphar? "Hey, kid, you're good at administration. Why don't I just give you everything to do, except don't eat my food and don't mess with my wife?" Yes, sir. Then he gets thrown into prison, and the warden looks at him and says, "Hey, kid, you're good at this administration stuff. Why don't you just administrate the whole prison?" Okay. Now Pharaoh says, "Hey, kid, you're good at this stuff. Why don't you just administrate the whole country? You'll be second. That's all. That's the only restriction. I'm sorry. You'll be second. I'm Pharaoh." Now sing it, Pharaoh, Pharaoh. There's a lot of stuff in here I see that I don't dare share with you. You'll be in charge. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So Pharaoh said, "Joseph, I therefore put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen. You see Joseph saying, "I had one of these once. I lost it somewhere." Put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and men shouted before him, "Make way, make way. Here comes the second in command." And he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. My goodness. And Pharaoh changes his name and says, "You're going to be now the supporter. You're going to be the one who sustains this land," in verses 44 through the end. He's given a wife. Pharaoh says, "You need a wife before you start." And so there's the best of times. Then he has two children. Manasseh is his firstborn out of this union. He names him Manasseh, which means, "God has made me forget all my troubles and all my father's household." Forget all my father's household, what does that mean? It could not mean that he really forgot his whole father and all his brothers. Otherwise, he would not have mentioned it. It may mean that he now sees that what was days of evil and struggle has now been erased by the joy of his new position as vice president of Egypt, where he could not only bring blessing to the nations, but his own family as well. Others have thought that he was given some spiritual insight, that God was going to use him, as seen in his two dreams. And this time, as a slave, was all part of the other plan, all the other plans of his life, to bring glory to God and blessing to the nations as well as his own family. So Manasseh, "God has made me forget all my troubles and all my father's household." Then there's Ephraim, "God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." He was suffering physically, he was suffering emotionally, but now there's a time of spiritual blessing. Lots of fruit. Both names have a note of thankfulness to God, the God who preserves and the one who blesses. Both confirm the promise, "I am with you." Thus Joseph is expressing his faith that God has been with him and has blessed him. We go back to David's psalm, and all of a sudden it's all fulfilled, 105. "God called down famine in the land and destroyed all their supplies of food, and he sent a man before them, Joseph, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles, his neck was put in irons, till what he foretold came to pass, till the word of the Lord proved him true. And then there was the worst of times. After the 7 years of blessing came the 7 years of famine." The famine was so severe that people who were in the famine couldn't remember how good it was. They were so consumed by how bad it was. And yet Joseph, because of his wisdom from God, putting aside all the wheat and all the grain, a fifth of it from all the farmers, storing all that up for the time of the famine, when the famine came, no one died. But the famine spread throughout not only Egypt, but it also spread throughout the other nations and affected his very family, which we'll see next week, to his great joy and pride. And it fulfills a partial fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant given to his great-grandfather. "For he was told by God, in you and your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed." There's so much going on physically, there's so much going on emotionally, there's so much going on spiritually. God's at work in all three arenas all the time. In Joseph's life as well as our lives. As I told you, Joseph is this beautiful image of the Messiah to come, of Jesus Christ. Let me read from the Message. "As Joseph was moved by God from a position as a slave to a prophet and ruler, so we can see in the image of Christ. Humiliation before exaltation. As all were to bow down before Joseph, so all shall bow before Jesus. Listen to this from the Message, Philippians 2. When the time came, he set aside the privilege of deity and took on the status of a slave. That is, he became human. It was an incredible humbling process. He didn't claim special privileges. Instead, he lived in a selfless, obedient life and then died a selfless, obedient death. And the worst kind of death is that, a crucifixion. Because of that obedience, God lifted him high and honored him far above and beyond anyone or anything. Even so, that all created beings in heaven and on earth, even those long ago dead and buried, will bow one day in worship before this Jesus Christ and call out in praise that he is the master of all to the glorious honor of God the Father. God is at work in our lives. He wants us to be in the character of the image of his Son. Part of that maturing process that we go through is where we need to learn how to trust him, place our faith in him, that he is with us regardless of the circumstances. The second most important step in this spiritual maturity is where we no longer trust in ourselves. That's the hard one. That's the hard one. Remember what Paul said? We learn through the trial he was in. We learn no longer to trust in ourselves, but God who raises the dead. Because we were so helpless, we had nothing left. We thought we were going to die. And then God delivered us. The third step in this process of growing into the image of Christ is that we be filled with the Spirit. That is, that we allow the Spirit of God to have control over all of our lives, all day long, all night long. That's a process. It takes time. We have the Spirit within us, but will we allow him to fill us with his power, with his personality, as he reflects the character of Christ through us? And then the fourth thing is, the fourth step, is to allow the Lord to place us in positions where we can bring great blessing to others. And they're strange positions. I heard last week of a man who was in the hospital, and he was there for 4 weeks before he came to his healing, his physical healing. And the staff, the nurses and doctors, came to him and said, "Oh, Bill, we are so sad that you got well." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You've brought so many blessings to this hospital since you've been here. We just didn't want to see you get well." We don't think of being raised up in that kind of a situation to bring blessing to many, as Joseph will be. We think, no, we'd rather be the President of the United States. Let's start from there. Oh, well, let's be the President of the world, since we're in the arena of wanting to rule and bring blessing. You can bring blessing right where you are if you're placing your faith in God, if you are not trusting yourself, if you allow the Spirit of God to take over your life, and if you allow him to raise you up in that moment, in that day, in that month, in that arena, wherever you're placed, let God do it, and you will bring blessing to others, and you will also find your heart filled with joy, and peace, and a sense of righteousness. What a way to live. What a way to live. Is there another way? I don't think so. Not one that brings such joy in the midst of the pain. Let's stand together.